Back in 1966, Drew Schaefer started a small group in Kansas City called the Phoenix Society. The creation of this group doesn't make it into a lot of history books, but for some, it's one of the biggest events in the history of Kansas City. The Phoenix Society was Kansas City's first gay pride organization, and its creation is just one of many milestones in the little-known history of gays and lesbians in Kansas City. The Gay and Lesbian Archives of Mid-America is working to uncover that hidden history. Alex Smith recently met with the project's director.
On the fourth floor of UMKC's main library, Stuart Hines has been collecting donated artifacts from Kansas City's gay and lesbian history for the past 3 years. There's magazines, newsletters, photos, and records. The items on display are dominated by a huge old wallpaper sample book that served as a scrapbook for the mother of gay rights activist Drew Schaefer. For years, Mrs. Schaefer collected every newspaper article she could find relating to gay rights. Surveying this huge scrapbook and other parts of the collection, Hines can see what life was like for gays and lesbians through decades of oppression and gradual acceptance. Letters and photos show how, before the mid-1960s, the only social life for these communities was private and secret.
For a lot of folks, socialization took place through what they call house parties. People would invite folks over to their home, and there'd be a big party, and that's how you met people. And so that's how you became known in the community, the burgeoning community. And so you just went from house to house, week to week, and that was your social life.
So what was the first group that really presented a public face to the general community?
I'd say that would be the Phoenix Society for Individual Freedom, which was founded by Drew Schaefer in 1966. It was an early advocacy group. They actually had a community center on the corner of Linwood and the Paseo on the southwest corner, and published a newsletter for 2 or 3 years, and were truly the first visible presence, and that's 3 years before Stonewall.
The 70s are known as being a big decade for, you know, gay pride in the United States. Do you see a lot of examples of that represented here with materials from Kansas City?
I do. They're in Mrs. Schaefer's scrapbook, and we have a loose copy of a magazine called Spectrum that was published in, I think, July of 79, and it talks about the pride parade that was held that year. It started at Liberty Memorial, marched up Grand to 11th Street, across 11th to Main, and back down Main to the memorial, which was, you know, kind of a walk. But from the photographs, very well attended, and from the reporting, very active, very well supported. It was a Sunday morning, and then that afternoon, everyone congregated at a farm out in Gardner, Kansas.
So how did the archives show the impact of AIDS on the gay community?
Through Mrs. Schaefer's scrapbooks and through scrapbooks that were compiled by Art Brett and Bill Todd. Mr. Brett's scrapbooks start in about 1985, and so you really start seeing the coverage of AIDS and its impact on the community in the articles that he compiled. And what you see in some of the materials that have been collected is a transformation of the way the community reacted to the epidemic. You see mass media coverage. You see coverage in gay and lesbian publications that has a much more, particularly the LGBT publications, they have a much more frantic tone to them as opposed to the mainstream articles, which have a frantic tone to them as well, but more of a, let's all panic because we don't know what's causing this and we're all going to get sick. You know, the firefighters won't come rescue the sick people. The hospital workers are going to douse themselves in clothing and latex to protect themselves. But over time, as management of the disease sort of happens, you see it become more entrenched in the philanthropic efforts of the community at large.
The archives are a joint project between the UMKC Library and the Kansas City Museum, which houses larger artifacts like costumes. Not all of the collected material shows gays and lesbians in a positive light. There's some sensational pulp fiction books from the 1950s and early 60s and some anti-gay propaganda. But Stuart Hines says collecting this kind of material is also important for telling the full story.
Well, as a research institution and as a publicly funded museum, we try not to make judgment calls on the material that comes to us in terms of content, because everything tells a side of the story, a piece of the story. And so if we get something that's hateful, like if someone were to donate a Fred Phelps sign, that'd actually be pretty awesome, because it would be very telling of the other side of the story. And so all the pieces, as I try to say to students and donors, all the pieces fit together to tell the complete story, whether that's a positive piece or whether that's a negative piece. You've got to have both to tell the complete story.
In addition to the physical artifacts, Hines has been collecting oral history from people in Kansas City's gay and lesbian communities. Among the audio he's collected is the story of Victor and Victor, two men who were together for 59 years. In one interview, they talked about fighting police harassment in the 1960s. Here's a clip.
They come in to watch the game.
I'd like to touch on the Vice Squad, mm-hmm. and the time at, you know, in that particular time. I feel that we were very lucky in many ways. Around election time, they put more pressure on gay people. And then also, as he mentioned before, there were times when they would come in and haul a few people down to the station and, book them or whatever. And we were always advised to carry $25 for our self-mail. And, of course, you know that went to the policeman there. Yeah, there's no doubt about that. So, anyway, as he mentioned also, we always kind of forewarned that at usually around 11 o'clock there would be a paddy wagon draw up and a few people were taken out. Well, there were other bars in the town, too, that had somewhat of the same treatment, I'm sure. But with our group, everybody said, we've got to do something about this. And about that time, Stonewall was occurring. And so personally, I couldn't really remember too much about what was going on.
Well, remember.
And I felt the impact anyway. But they said, well, let's do something about this. So a bunch of people got together and they said, okay, the next time there's a raid, we'll all go down to the station. So there were about 20 of us or so lined up behind the paddy wagon.
And walked right down behind it.
The bartender even closed the bar.
He said, I'm closing the bar.
And then when we got over to the police station, whatever the sergeant is that books you, he said, what the hell are you all doing here? I said, well, we want to be booked with everybody else. I said, oh, the hell with it.
Get out of here.
Too much work. And he said, get out of here. So that more or less started the feeling of, things have to change. And so there were a couple of gay political societies. I can't remember what. One was the Mattachine, mm-hmm. the two C's, and the other one was Phoenix. Mm-hmm. And they were the ones that PFLAG emitted from one or the other. Anyway, had parents that were interested in trying to help their children.
So you all followed the paddy wagon?
Yeah, we followed from the bar down to be booked.
To the police station.
Yeah.
And the thing of it is, if they booked you, then you looked in the paper the next morning, the first thing, because they listed your name, right. your address, your phone number, and where you worked.
Yeah, right. As much like the sex offenders these days.
And right. that all stopped. They stopped listing it.
Uh-huh.
All that information, and just said that the group was taken in. And
so this was about 69, 68?
Yeah, about that time, yeah. Okay.
That was a segment from the Gay and Lesbian Archive of Mid-America Oral History Project. You're listening to Casey Currents.
Do you talk to people who are reluctant to, you know, give up this stuff either because, you know, it has a, you know, real personal significance to them, or maybe because they just don't want the public to see it?
We haven't really experienced that. What we have seen, and I can see it physically in someone, is a transformation in the way that they think about the stuff of their life. To recognize that an institution of higher education and a museum would be interested in the stuff of their life really makes an impact on them. It brings home to them that their story really is a piece of history. And you can see that shift in their perception of what it is they're turning over to the archive. And it's been really, really gratifying professionally and personally to watch that happen, because they just think about it differently. The first question we get is always, well, what do you want? It's like, well, we don't really know what we want until we see what's out there. And in almost all the cases, it's been a pleasure and a surprise as to what's come our way.
Why do you think that it is important to collect all this material?
To convey to young people what it was like, particularly young LGBT people, that you haven't always had gay and lesbian people on television. You haven't always had out athletes in the Olympics. You haven't always had a president that will support same-sex marriage. It's been a real struggle to get to this point. And kids today, young people today, don't know that. And without this kind of documentation and without these kinds of stories, they will lose that. And to me, it's critical to preserve these materials and to preserve these stories so that these young people know where they came from.
Stuart Hines, thank you for your time.
Thank you very much.
Stuart Hines is Director of Special Collections at UMKC's Miller-Nichols Library.